Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 98, France, Antarctique. Today we turn our attention back to Brazil, to cover the next major event in its nascent post-Columbian history. Last time we did an episode on it, we looked at the captaincy system, which Portugal implemented to govern it. This system was short-lived. Most of the captaincies failed. And in the end, Portugal brought them under the control of one Brazilian government. They do mark, however, the next slow step in Portugal's interest in their American colony, although their focus was still largely on their interests in Asia. This step was not enough. Their relative lack of effort will cause them problems. Right now, in fact. Today we will detail an unexpected episode in Latin America's history. One which won't have long-lasting direct consequences, but which is important for a myriad of indirect and symbolic reasons, as well as being quite interesting in itself. Taking advantage of Portuguese inattention, our story this episode is of France's first Brazilian colony. We should begin with a little context. In the early episodes of this podcast, I outlined some of the alternative so far, and probably for most of them always, unproven theories about Europeans reaching the Americas before Columbus. One which I don't think I brought up, I didn't know about it at the time, was the speculation surrounding two French explorers who some believed had already reached Brazil. The first was named Jean Cousin. He is said to have sailed across the Atlantic and reached the mouth of the Amazon River. He is supposed to have landed there, but quickly sailed back. If this did happen, on this expedition was one of the Pinzon brothers, who you might remember were important Spanish explorers who accompanied Columbus, captaining his ships on the first voyage, and then also undertaking explorations of their own. People who do believe that this French expedition happened argue that because this Pinzon brother had already been to the Americas, he was then able to guide Columbus. The second French expedition was led by a man named Doneville. It is generally agreed that this one did happen, but whether he reached the Americas is disputed. While no matter what, he was challenging the Portuguese right to the non-European world, he was actually trying to do it in Asia. He wanted to reach Indonesia and the Spice Islands. When he reached South Africa, attempting to round the south of the continent, he was struck by a storm, which blew him off course. We don't know where he ended up, but he landed somewhere and brought an indigenous boy back with him to France when he returned. Wherever it was far to the south of the equator, as he referred to it as a great southern land. This makes sense, as his last known location was South Africa. Some believe that he reached Madagascar. Others at the time, the mythical land of Terra Australis. There are some who believe the whole thing never took place. A theory which is relevant to us is that he ended up in southern Brazil, in the state of Santa Catarina, to be precise. This feels less likely to me, although not impossible, I guess. But his French hometown and the one in Brazil where the theory says that he landed have both adopted the idea. In Honfleur, his arrival in Brazil is celebrated every year, while there is a plaque in the town where he is supposed to have arrived, which commemorates the event. Wherever he was, if he was anywhere, he is supposed to have reported that French traders were already there, not settling, but buying goods to sell back home. If it was Brazil, and if there was any truth to it, then this would be quite a change in our understanding. While we're on the subject, there is another link story, that of the Basques. This is interesting and doesn't fit neatly with the rest of the rumours of foreign powers reaching the Americas. The Basques are an ancient people, written about by the Romans, and they occupy an area which straddles the French and Spanish border. They speak a language completely unconnected to any other that we know of, and their origins are completely unknown. Many of them made their living through fishing, particularly chasing whales, and they launched expeditions as far as Canada. One of the reasons that this French colony in Brazil was important is because it represents the first state-sponsored attempt to encroach on the American territory assigned to Spain and Portugal by the Pope through the Treaty of Tordesillas. Now, these Basque sailors took it upon themselves to sail across the Atlantic, and what's more, many of them were Spanish subjects living within Spain's territory. Some, however, lived on the French side of the border, which makes them relevant enough to discuss here, I would argue at least. Anyway, all of those stories are background information. This was something different, a deliberate attempt by the French state to colonize what was becoming Latin America. While the dates linked to the supposed Gonneville expedition can be questioned, the fact that French traders were visiting Brazil after Columbus, at least, does seem to be true. Just as Portuguese merchants had been building small logging camps before the state officially got involved, so too had small French companies. This continued when the Portuguese crown claimed control. Because these were not attempts at conquest, these French merchants are said to have had established good relations with the indigenous peoples they encountered. Something borne out in this story. To some extent, at least, they acted as guests, and probably, importantly, they weren't trying to establish permanent settlements and take over land for farming. Their numbers were small enough that the logging they engaged in didn't disrupt the lifestyle of the indigenous peoples, and apparently some French traders even started to live among them and adopt those lifestyles. Things were about to change, though. Presumably, the riches which were flowing into Spain were a major impetus for this. The French king was about to take the radical step of approving the first government-affiliated non-Iberian colony in the Americas. Another motivation would soon emerge, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. The king was persuaded by a man named Nicolas Durand de Villegagnon, an extremely prominent noble who had plenty of experience fighting in wars in Europe. He proposed to lead the expedition himself, and the king quickly agreed. He'd identified the Guanabara Bay as the best site for the colony. This is the bay on which Rio de Janeiro sits today. He had specifically chosen a small island at the mouth of the bay, which could be easily defended, and to which ships could dock without an issue. All going well, they could expand from there. Today, this island is no longer a true island. It has been connected to the mainland, very close to Rio de Janeiro's city centre, by the runway of one of its two main airports. The Portuguese had tried to establish a settlement on the bay, but it had been undermanned, and those who were there acted aggressively towards the indigenous people. They were driven out as a consequence, many not making it to their boats alive. The French took advantage of their favourable reputation, and relations with the Tupinambá, who lived in the area, were good. They even helped the French to fortify the island. The colonists generally had good things to say about the indigenous peoples, but although he tried to foster good relations for practical reasons, Villegagnon wrote letters back to Europe outlining his personal disdain for them. He also tried to prevent his men from forming relationships with indigenous women. But this didn't work, and eventually some of his colonists were so angry about this rule that they tried to assassinate him. Things were not easy in the new colony. The island lacked water, and the colonists had trouble gathering enough food to support themselves. They also suffered from tropical disease. At least, however, the Portuguese didn't seem to be paying any attention to their encroachment.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After about 2 years, Villegagnon asked for help in the form of reinforcements, which brings us on to the second motive for founding the colony. Most people know about the Pilgrims, who first landed in the United States escaping religious persecution. A similar story occurred here. France, like the rest of Europe, was being rocked by religious conflict. The first Protestant strains of Christianity were emerging at that very moment, and it was a dangerous time to be part of one. Villegagnon was personal friends with John Calvin, one of the most important Protestant leaders. He wrote to him directly, asking if he would send some of his followers to the colony. In return, they would face no persecution there. Calvin's French followers are commonly known as Huguenots. Many of them were forced out of France. Lots moved to London, where they played an important part in the growth of my city's East End. Villegagnon seems to have been sympathetic to the Huguenots, especially compared to the bulk of his Catholic countrymen. This changed, though, when the group he invited arrived in Brazil. Pretty soon they fell out, the flashpoint apparently being the finer points of how Mass should be celebrated. Despite his apparent willingness to avoid the conflicts tearing through his homeland, it seems that he couldn't stop them following him to this remote outpost. The Huguenots were banished to the mainland, where they lived among the Tupinambá for several months. Most managed to get a ride back to France, but five chose to give it another go in the colony. Of those, Villegagnon ended up killing three for refusing to follow Christianity the way he wanted. As an aside, this seems to have permanently changed Villegagnon's attitude to Protestants. When all his adventures in the New World were finished, he tried to challenge his old friend Calvin to a public debate on the subject, and devoted his time to writing a book on the very detail about the celebration of Mass, which he had fallen out with the Protestant colonists over. At this point, he also left the colony and returned to France. He wouldn't return to Brazil again. Relations with the indigenous people remained good, but the French inadvertently introduced diseases, which killed quite a lot of them. 2 years after the incident with the Huguenots, the Portuguese appointed a new governor to take control of Brazil. His name was Mem de Sá, and he had a much more proactive approach than his predecessor. He did not like this illegal, by the definition of the Treaty of Tordesillas, incursion into his territory, and he resolved to kick the French out. He didn't take any chances either. He sent a force of around 2,000, and they spent 3 weeks sitting on their ships in the bay, scoping out the French colony. It was difficult to take, as the defences were well made, but the Portuguese outnumbered them significantly. The territory of the Tupinambá stretched a long way up the coast, and so it was quite possible that the inhabitants of this area had previous experience of the Portuguese. Whether it was a dislike of them, or an active liking of the French, they appear to have been happy to assist in the resistance. Hundreds of them joined the French in the defence of the island. When the Portuguese attacked, the battle was a fierce one. It lasted 2 days, and more on the Portuguese side were killed than on the other. Eventually the French ran out of water, and decided that they could resist no longer. They didn't surrender, however. They took to the water on canoes, abandoning their settlement, but not the bay. This was the end of their colony, but not the end of their dream of retaining control of the region. The next 7 years were characterized by guerrilla warfare. They lived among their Tupinambá allies, and the Portuguese were afraid that their largest settlements, as far away as today's São Paulo, might be attacked. They recognized the value in colonizing Rio de Janeiro themselves, both because of its strategic advantages, but also as a way of keeping the French out. They lacked the resources to do it, however. Every time they tried to do anything on this long stretch of coastline, they found themselves under fierce attack by the Tupinambá, sometimes assisted by the French colonists. It wasn't just on land that they were threatened. Sometimes the Tupinambá would assemble huge fleets of war canoes and attack passing Portuguese ships. The most significant example of this was given the name the Battle of the Canoes. Details are scarce, but apparently 180 canoes came to attack a much smaller Portuguese force. The Tupinambá apparently had access to gunpowder, and it was only when a canoe full of the stuff caught fire and then exploded that the indigenous fleet retreated. Eventually, 5 years after the destruction of the French settlement, they managed to found Rio de Janeiro after reinforcements arrived from Lisbon. The spot they chose was at the foot of the Sugarloaf. If you've been to Rio, you'll know where this is. Mem de Sá put his nephew in charge of this, but it would take another 2 years before the final confrontation with the French. The first battle took place behind Flamengo Beach. The Portuguese won and pushed the French around the bay. Mem de Sá's nephew was hit in the face by an arrow, and he would die a few months later. The governor now took control of the war. He moved Rio de Janeiro to the spot where its city centre is today, and then pursued the French to the place where they had built fortifications. Today, this place is called Governor's Island, and coincidentally, it's where the other Rio de Janeiro airport is. After 3 days of cannon bombardment, the French surrendered, and that was the end of their Rio de Janeiro colony. The survivors went back to France. Their indigenous allies were punished for picking the wrong side, and many were enslaved. France Antarctique, as they had named it, lasted for 12 years in total, if you include the time living among the Tupinambá on the mainland. It might have been relatively short-lived, but it was important for three reasons. Most directly, it resulted in the foundation of Rio de Janeiro, one of the world's great cities, and an extremely important one in Portuguese Brazil. Secondly, it was a wake-up call. Portugal realized it needed to start taking Brazil more seriously. They didn't take it too seriously, though. It will be a slow process. It wasn't until the French had another go at colonizing Brazil 50 years later, up in the far north, that the Portuguese really, really started paying attention to South America. The last reason is that, as I hinted before, it sets a precedent. Yes, we've seen German Venezuela and Genoese merchants in Panama City, but these were sanctioned by the Spanish crown. This was different. The infallibility of the Treaty of Tordesillas had been called into question. The fact that still Catholic France had done this, not Protestant England or Holland, for example, just made this breach of the Pope's orders more powerful. It won't be too long now until other European powers decide to start interfering in the New World. We are used to a map of the Americas, which includes places with British, French, and Dutch connections. Even Denmark and the obscure Duchy of Courland, part of today's Latvia, will try to establish colonies in the Caribbean. The dam would probably have broken at some point, but French Rio de Janeiro was the trailblazer which opened the door to all the others. If you've enjoyed this episode and you feel like doing something to help out the podcast, one thing which is really useful is if you left a review wherever you get your podcast from. This helps new people discover the show. If you really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling generous, it is possible to make a small donation. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. Thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/MaxSargentPhoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/MaxSergeantPhoto. Thanks for listening.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.